Welcome to Vanator Tools. This week, a special treat, we have an hour-long interview with a talent manager, a member of the MT community, to help you understand as a manager and potentially as executive about the kind of relationship you need to have with some of the people that make a difference in your organization, in your career. Here we go. Hey folks, Mark here with another PSA. I'll be brief. If you're listening to this cast and you're getting a sense of the stuff that happens above you, or maybe the stuff that happens at your level that you're not really super familiar with, you got to come to the M Conference. It's our conference for managers and executives. You're going to get exposed to a lot of people, a lot of new ideas. It's not presented by us. We have members of our community present. Topic fascinating, and more importantly, your network will be grown significantly. You'd be crazy not to know about this group and then choose not to join it. So come to the website, sign up for the M Conference, October 26th and 27th in Chicago. Mike, I've already done the intro, and while we were talking before we started recording, you, of course, mentioned that there are some people, and you were referring to me, of course, who don't always speak of HR in the positive. I want to defend myself a little bit by saying, I don't know if you've listened lately, but in the first 5 to 7 years of Manager Tools, I used to say I hate HR, of course, which you reminded me of when years ago when you and I met in Seattle. And I now have moderated my stance a little bit because I've gotten older and wiser. And so now I don't say I hate HR. I say I hate bad HR, and there's a lot of bad HR out there. But I realized, first of all, that there are a lot of HR people who cared deeply about the work we were doing. They were thrilled that we were doing it because it is all about people, Horstman's first law. And you and I connected because I saw in you somebody who saw the value of people and talent and development and so on. And you were a big fan of Manager Tools many years ago. So the purpose of this guidance, this cast, is to help the hundreds of thousands of people who listen to us, who would get exposed to somebody at your level. But as I said before, it's kind of opaque. I don't know what you do. We had a saying in the Army called echelons above reality. You're at a level that the kind of conversations you have, I'm busy down here grinding in the trenches. And then we've got somebody very senior looking at talent across the entire organization. And I thought, why aren't we teaching our community about the nature of relationships with those people? We talk about knowing people in HR and finance and various other places in the organization, but you're a real live HR person who aligns well with our guidance about people and effectiveness and results and retention and so on. So what I'd like to start with first is I want you to, however you wish to describe it, describe what you do in the talent field and more broadly. And then I'm going to start asking you questions about what you do and about me, if I'm a manager, senior manager, director, perhaps, about my ability to create a relationship with you and the kind of stuff you do and how that could help me and how I'd go about it. So, folks, I'm going to turn it over to Mike Elgin, a good friend of mine.
Thank you, Matt. This is a real pleasure and an honor, so thank you. I'll start with kind of what I do a little bit. And so I look after talent management. The easiest way to describe that is probably in terms of the functional responsibility. So what are the things that we look after? So, starting at the top of the organization, we link with workforce planning, understanding how the organization needs to look structurally in order to deliver on the value that we're trying to create. And that's what we do. We are a link to the value creation at an organizational and an individual level. So we look at the workforce plan, what are the roles we need, what are the types of people we need in those roles.
And Mike, I got to interrupt real quick.
Yeah.
I just intuited from that something that I'm not sure everybody in the audience would necessarily intuit it, that when the strategy changes, the workforce by definition changes, right? We're investing less here and more there.
It does.
But sometimes if I'm 5 levels down or 6 levels down, I might not understand what that big new initiative means. And that may be good or bad for my career, right? So what I'm thinking as an old guy who's been around the block, I should be paying more attention to what I'm hearing from senior people in mass emails or in corporate announcements. to help me sense what I think that means for my division, my group, my department.
Absolutely. And that is the roadmap to your future right there.
Okay. Yeah.
If you don't have a clear idea of where the organization is heading and a sense of when it's changing, then you can't possibly be on the front foot.
Right.
You can't be ready. You can't be the person going to your boss or your boss's boss and saying, hey, I hear we're trying this out. How can I be part of that? Or even better, I think I can help with that.
Yeah.
You're then the guy that is, or the girl that's creating opportunities for your team and your teams below you so that you are pivoting and heading in the direction that the organization is going in. And you're one of the first through the door.
Right.
I think that's really important.
And yet most managers, just to use your word, are blind to it.
Right.
In fact, I would argue that even though you and I both know that organizations have essentially given up on the old-fashioned idea that your company, your organization, will manage your career, the average manager acts as if he or she is having their career managed by somebody else. Mm-hmm. But in fact, that's not the case. They have significant opportunity to influence that by their communications, by their relationships, and so on.
They absolutely do. And it might be at the micro level of what happens around them, but what happens around you will ultimately impact your future and the future of the people that work for you.
Yeah.
And I think this is probably something that you would have learned in the army, and it applies in any situation, sports, in everything. You got to keep your head up. You got to have your eyes up. You've got to be looking around you. You've got to be scanning the horizon. You've got to know what's happening
right. To
be able to be most effective at doing the thing that's right in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have that vision or that direction of where you're trying to get to, you're lost, right? It's luck if you're going to get there.
So let me pick at your brain a little bit. So I'm senior manager, let's say. So there's three or four guys between me and you. Right. There's a director and maybe a junior vice president and then a vice president who is getting toward the top. And so therefore, in some of those conversations where you might be at the very top of the organization, and let's say my VP, my director, I don't get anything from them. I might get a broadcast email operationally from the entire organization, from CEO or CAO or something like that. What do I do if I'm a couple levels down, but I'm aligned well with what I think the mission and the values of my organization are, and yet I don't get any sense that anybody's thinking about me other than writing my performance review and so on. Are there things I can do to expose myself or to try to understand what's happening if the chain of command, probably an old phrase, if the chain of command is not really giving me a sense of what I'm doing and where it matters and how it matters and so on? I feel like a lot of managers, frontline managers, certainly, even senior managers, their context, their sense of context, I would say is fairly low. Yeah. I hate to say it. I don't mean to be negative, but that's just my gut feel that they don't know.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And the larger the organization you're in, the greater that risk.
Sure.
You know, when you're in a relatively small organization, you tend to hear everything that's going on and you tend to know everybody, right?
Right.
So it's very easy to point to the person you need to know. I would say in a big organization, you don't need to know me necessarily, but there will be people in my team who are closer to your level. Find those people out. They are looking to progress and grow as well. Get a sense from them as to what's going on, create a relationship with them. And then when they're having conversations with me, your name is coming up. You know, oh, there's this great guy in marketing or what have you. But across the organization, you know, there'll be a strategy type function and there'll be some super senior people in strategy that you might not get anywhere near. They know exactly what's going on, right?
Right.
They will have people working for them who again might be closer to your level, who have possibly a better sense of what's going on than you do.
Right.
Create a relationship with them, offer something up for them that's helpful so that they learn what's going on in marketing or legal or whatever area you're in. And you learn from them as well. Buy them a coffee, you know, create a relationship.
So this is interesting. You say create a relationship. And I know because we have We get emails all the time, hundreds of emails a day from our community. If we say create a relationship, I guarantee I'll get 200 emails when this podcast comes out. What did Mike mean when he said create a relationship? So I'm going to be very tactical for a minute. You said have a coffee. So in other words, I think that some of the strategy stuff is really interesting. Now, I'm not going to talk to the VP of strategy because he doesn't even know I exist. But he's got, or she's got, a few people on staff, and I can find out who those people are through our directory. And so you're suggesting I could send a mail. Ideally, if I'm at corporate headquarters, I could, if I'm going up there once a quarter for meetings or whatever, I could say, hey, look, I'm going to be up there for a couple of meetings. I would love to buy you a cup of coffee and just understand what my little place in the world is, and perhaps provide you a beachhead. If you ever need something from me, you're suggesting that that's the kind of thing you do. Just to open the door.
Yeah. And I'd even turn it around. I think all people have egos and often the best way to build a relationship with someone is to make them feel good about what they do. Hey, I heard you're an expert at X.
Right.
You know, I'd really value the opportunity to learn a little bit from you about what you do, and I'll buy you a coffee or lunch or whatever it takes, and I can give you everything that you need about what we do. But
right. You
know, that's the best way to get in with people. Who doesn't love hearing that?
Yeah, good.
And who doesn't enjoy? Here we are. Who doesn't enjoy talking about what they do?
Yes.
Right. So, you know, it's not as hard as people think. And look, we talk about it. You talk about it a lot. I'm an extrovert, so I'm probably more inclined to do that than some of our introverted colleagues. But it doesn't change the fact, and you've said this loads of times, we're all people, and you can't just say, I'm not going to do that.
I'm not going to do it because I'm an uncomfortable. I'm an introvert, and that's uncomfortable for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I've one of the things that I've learned in the last 20 years, 18 years for the podcast is the number of people who lose out on opportunities because of that introversion they have. Well, no, I'm not going to do that. No, I wouldn't. They talk themselves out of it, and they give a very impressive reason why they shouldn't do it. And I'm an extrovert like you. And so I think, well, that's a competitive advantage for me that some other people aren't doing it. But the problem is that not all talent is in the extroverts. There are plenty of introverts with the talents that we need. And if the introverts don't break through that moment of discomfort, if you will, the organization suffers.
It does.
Yeah.
And I mean, going back to what I do, that is succession and talent planning, right?
Right.
So you know the roles that the organization needs now and in the future. You've done that piece of work. Then you're looking at, do you have the right people in those roles? And succession planning, and you did a great cast on succession planning and baseball cards. And my job is to do the corporate version of that, right? Like if I can create an easy-to-use process for the leadership and for the people that have to execute it, great. If I have people like you doing it for me in the organization, even better.
So okay, go back to that for a second, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned that before we started recording, that you listened to the baseball card cast. So a lot of times I think when we put out casts and people hear us and we say, yeah, this is the way it's done, some version of baseball carding, if you will, they kind of roll their eyes like, yeah, okay, that happens maybe, but I'm not at that level. But you're one of those guys who's in the meetings where as a talent manager for your organization, you are responsible for gathering information and presenting to senior people the strengths and weaknesses of people all over the organization to help them decide who's ready now, who's ready next, where they might go, and how the organization could benefit from them. So spend a couple of minutes and talk about, you know, you guys may or may not use baseball cards, although baseball cards is just it happens to be one particularly thing that I've seen used 20 or 30 times. But tell me about the process that you guys use in your organization.
So we use a process whereby we focus pretty heavily at the senior levels, because that's where you get the scale and the leverage effect, right?
Sure.
The better your top people are, the better the rest of the organization is. We gather on a half-yearly and yearly basis, really an overview of the strengths, the areas for development, and kind of the career growth opportunities of the people in the organization. Almost exactly word for word what you have on the baseball cards you talked about, right? Because it's not that it's not that difficult. Well, sorry, that's not true. It's not that complicated.
Right. Exactly.
It doesn't need to be complicated. And I think bad HR often is overcomplicated HR.
Right.
Good HR kind of gets out of the way and lets the business get done and supports that.
Yeah.
But really, we gather the information to be able to have the conversation. And it's a roundtable conversation of the most senior people talking about the individuals within their particular part of the organization. What is it? It's steel cage death match.
I yes. think
you refer
yes.
to it, right? That's right. That's one of the steel cage death matches.
Yeah.
And so, you know, where it works well, and I think we're having this conversation because the audience wants to know, well, how can I do better? You know, what can I do that makes my team or my chances better in that particular conversation if I'm not in it? Well, it's about preparation. What does a good baseball card look like versus a bad one, right? And if I have someone who doesn't think it's important, doesn't make the effort, and the strengths for their people are works hard, gets on well with others, and the weaknesses could communicate better. I'm like,
oh my gosh.
Come on, right? Like, we are skipping over that person, and it's not that person's fault. It's your fault.
Right. So here's what I heard when you said that. You read that and you think this manager is not engaged in this process. And by 100%. Definition, whatever I'm getting about her people or his people is essentially vague, uncertain. And I'm not going to put it in front of people, or even if I'm put it in front of people, they're going to know, no, this person does not get it. They're not aligned with the idea that we need to promote our talent. We need to find the opportunities for them. We need to put them in the right slot because they were swamped that week. And so they did it quickly. And they did it the way they kind of do a performance review, which is just everybody kind of gets the same thing except our star performer.
Right.
And so I take it that you're saying, not in your present job, but at some point in your career, you've seen baseball cards or the equivalent like that.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. All the time.
Gosh. Okay. So let's do the other side of the coin. I'm a manager. No, it's not me. It's some other manager. What would you see on a baseball card that makes you think, okay, you may not know this guy or gal, but what would you see that makes you think, okay, this person's put some quality time to this and has really helped us make good decisions about talent distribution?
That's a pretty tough question. I'll give you an answer that probably doesn't satisfy the detail that people are looking for,
right,
but it gives you the context.
Sure.
So the things that I'm looking for are strengths in relation to the role, or even better, the function in the organization.
Right.
So what are the things that this person does to, and I keep coming back to this, create value for the organization in the specific area that they are responsible for?
Yeah.
It's not vanilla, right? It's not communicates well, because like, you know, that is as vague as it can be. It's what do they do specifically in relation to their role or their function that creates value for the organization, and even better, could create more value if they were given an opportunity in a more senior part of the organization or more responsibility. And when I see that, I know that someone's really thought about it. I know that that manager understands the context within which they operate and understands the people that work for them and where they are strong and where they are not strong.
Right. So if I'm a VP, if I put down for one of my directors, I'm going to make this up as I go, insightful hiring ability, hired 13 new people in the last year, no losses, has built a tight team, despite several people working in areas not in his specialty. That's the kind of thing. I made that up on the spur of the moment.
I'd hire that person tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what you're saying is I have to know my people really well. And then I
know your people.
You're not saying just market them well. You're saying know them well enough and know the organization well enough that I can predict or suggest how the organization should see the skills they're operating at this level.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. The marketing isn't done in what we probably conceive of a standard marketing way. The marketing is much more subtle. When I read that kind of baseball card, I know two things. One, the manager takes their role seriously.
Right.
And let's be honest, for the vast majority of us, particularly people who listen to your casts, we're in people businesses, right?
Yeah.
Most businesses are people business. Unless you're running a factory that has three people and 1,000 robots,
right,
you're in a people business. So if you're in a people business, you are being managed, or you are a manager by definition. And so when I read a baseball card like that, I know that I've got a manager who takes their management responsibility seriously. And the number of times I hear from people, look, that's management. Like, you know, I do that when I get time. My real job is X. If you have people reporting to you, your real job is not X.
Right.
It's managing those people. I mean, you talked about it probably thousands of times, right? The effect of increasing the capability or the performance of the people in your team by 10% each, if you've got 10 people, that's a whole extra person you've just created, if my maths is right, and it usually isn't, you know, which is much better than 10% better for yourself.
For you. Yeah.
Right?
On your tasks. Yeah.
Exactly. Absolutely.
I've been saying that for 25 years. Yeah.
So your job is management. So when I see that baseball card, I know that I've got someone here who takes management seriously. And that tells me two things. One, I need to give them more attention. I need to understand that person better if I don't already. And two, what they've written about their people, and therefore likely the quality and the capability of their people, is higher than the person or the team with the manager who clearly doesn't take it seriously. So my attention, maybe consciously or maybe unconsciously, is going to go to that team,
right,
before it goes to the other team. So in that conversation, in that steel cage death match, that is the team, that is the manager, that is the group that's going to get more attention. It's going to get more opportunities. You're going to see more promotions. You'll probably get paid more. Like, those are all of the things that will come as a result of you as a manager taking that responsibility seriously.
Yeah.
And we've talked before, and you said, you know, one of your questions was, what's one of the great misconceptions about my role, or what do people think, what do managers think? And managers often think that it's talent management or HR's responsibility to manage the careers of their people. And it absolutely isn't.
Right.
We provide the framework or the process or the structure. We're involved in some of the conversations, but it's your responsibility as a manager to manage your own career and to manage the careers of your other people. We are not de facto managers for your people.
Right. Hey, folks, you may not know this, but I'm on Twitter. Not on Facebook, not on Instagram, not on TikTok. I actually have work to do. I'm kidding. But a lot of people say they wanted me on Twitter, so I tweet every day. And I encourage you to follow me and respond if you think I've said something good or bad or stupid or whatever. Usually it's about work stuff 95% of the time. Every once in a while, I'll throw something golf in there. But you can find me at M.A. Horstman, and I'll spell that phonetically. Mike, Alpha, Hotel, Oscar, Romeo, Sierra, Tango, Mike, Alpha, November. Yeah, come follow me. Okay, so now I write that kind of thing, and so my people get some attention, and there are some baseball cards floating around in this meeting, semi-annually, annually, and so on. Give us a sense, because I think when I say it, people are like, well, that's just Mark. So give us a sense. You're there. This is your job. You're trying to put round pegs and round holes. You're trying to help senior leaders make the right decisions that put the right people in the right places to maximize organizational value. And I want to say that like 20 more times during this this podcast, mm-hmm. because I think to what you just said connects individual performance with the organization. And I make a point often that you have to understand where the organization gets value. It's one thing for you to say, I'm feeling productive, which, by the way, everyone thinks when they work from home. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's good. But are you certain that you're delivering value for the organization? Do you know you're aligned? If you think you're delivering a lot, but you're 40% off of kilter where you should be relative to the organization, because of your boss or whomever, you're being relatively inefficient in the kind of world we live in today. So you're in this meeting and the baseball cards are going around. Give me an example of the kinds of discussions that happen. Anonymized, obviously, but just something. Tell me the kinds of conversations that senior people have.
So the interesting thing is organizations and opportunities don't happen on a regular six-monthly cycle.
Right.
And I think, and this is my experience, and you might ask 10 talent managers from different organizations and get different, but my experience is actually often very little happens in that meeting.
Okay.
Knowledge
is exchanged.
That is what happens.
Yeah.
Knowledge is exchanged. Awareness is raised. The senior people, whether it's depending on what your structure of organization is, are going, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that person. I'm thinking now about a new venture that we're going to do in 3 months' time. And now all of a sudden, I know the person that I'm going to pull out
right.
and help me get that going. So that meeting itself, sometimes nothing comes of it in that meeting. There are not necessarily holes for the pegs at that time, but now I know what the pegs are that I have. What comes is between those meetings very often. So there's a new strategy, there's a new opportunity. The chairman flies in and says, hey, we're buying X. Do you have anyone who can go over there and help clean it up for me? And you're like, I know exactly the person. That's what happens from that meeting. So, and there are different kinds of meetings of that nature, right?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So there's the succession talent planning meeting. Do we have the right people now? How are we developing them for the future? So a lot of what gets discussed in those meetings is, okay, we know about these individuals or this individual. This is where they're good. This is where their gap is. If we think they might be a viable option for this future opportunity, then we know that we've got to close that gap. The delta between what they can do today and what we need them to do tomorrow is their development plan,
right?
Like that's what they're developing. So out of that meeting might come for you or your people new development opportunities because the organization is taking seriously the need to move you from here to here. And so, you know, development opportunities come out of that meeting. Maybe depending on the size of your organization, secondment or rotation opportunities come out. Those are the things that can come out. But the real value, I think, is the knowledge, the understanding that those senior people get of you and everyone in your team, so that when they're having different conversations or in different right. meetings, they're like, got it. I know. Hold on. Let me check my baseball cap. I know who it is. Right.
Yeah. And
it doesn't matter how big or small the organization is. You could do that. You could be part of a 100-person organization and you may be part of that top table conversation. You're talking about everyone in the organization. But you might be part of a 100,000-person organization and your scope is still 100 people. You should still be having that conversation for the 100 people in your part of the organization. That will feed up and up and up and up.
That's an interesting point. I have been telling, let's say, junior executives that aren't at the top of the organization, that aren't sitting down with the CEO and CAO and CFO and COO and so on. And I say, you're a vice president now. You've got a 600-person organization or a 1,000-person organization. This is a big firm, 100,000, 150,000 employees. If you don't run your own light form of succession planning, where you understand the talent of everybody and you don't ask your managers to be truthful and insightful and work hard on this, you will always be a step behind of where the organization needs you to be. And you won't be able to engage when the senior team that's doing the really global big stuff, you won't be able to engage with them about the strengths of the people in your organization. And so if I'm a VP and I've got a couple of, say, six senior directors, and we've got 30 directors and 100 managers or something like that, I'm supposed to know. I'm supposed to know all 150 of those managers. And Mike, I have to tell you, I have said that to some VPs, and they look at me like I have two heads. I said, no, I really, this is how it's done. And they said, well, that's not how it's done in my organization. I said, and I told one guy once, imagine that you were the only VP that did that, that knew that, that had your own baseball cards, that had your own miniature succession planning. Maybe there aren't as many jobs available as you might want, but to your point, it's not so much about jobs that are available right now. It's about sharing the knowledge so that the senior team knows what people are doing. And I've had limited success on that. I've not been as successful at convincing those people who aren't yet at the biggest table. I think everybody thinks things happen only at the biggest table, not in their little wedge, in their little area. So that's really good to hear.
Can I just add to that? What happens if you're on a plane one day and your CEO or your CFO or someone super senior in your organization just happens to be sitting beside you and they say, you know, tell me about what you do. Tell me about the people in your organization. You're like,
yeah.
What happens?
Yeah.
You know, that's not a good response. You know, I think you've talked about this, and if you haven't, I'm surprised. I'm sure you have. But it's about being the kind of manager, you know, and I use manager in that sort of general sense.
Sure. It could be a
you know,
leader.
The CEO is a manager, right?
Exactly.
The MD, the chairman of the board, everyone is the manager. If you are a manager, you want to be the kind of manager that people talk about, your people talk about as being, I really love working for Mark. You know, he supports me. He does this. He does that. All of the things that you want to be known for as a manager. And if you are known for that, a couple of things happen. One, your reputation above you grows because people like me go, that's someone who really takes this seriously. And if you take your job seriously, I'm going to help you more. And the second thing is, other people who aren't in your team want to work for you. And it gives you the opportunity to build a strong team. And sports is a great example, right? If you've got a manager or a coach that people want to play for, then people will move from other teams to be part of that. And it's not the people you don't want, it's the people you do want that are going to come across, right?
Absolutely.
And then your team gets better. And then your contribution to the organization becomes greater. So it doesn't matter what level you are. You are 100% right. If you are not taking that seriously, then you are missing out and your people are missing out. And, you know, if you listen to this, it's because you care about your career. It's because you care about your people and you want them to do well, right?
Yeah. So the way you said that, it's interesting because it brings up one of those fundamental dichotomies that I think people miss a lot when they think about their career. When people think about their career, and feel free to disagree with me if you like, but the way I think people see their careers is they look upward. Hmm. And, you know, okay, who can I impress? Who can I meet? Who can I persuade? Who can I press the flesh of? But at some point, you're not evaluated by just your relationships with more senior people. Those people are very smart and absolutely aligned with the organization or they wouldn't be there. And so what they want to know is the strength of your people. Because if you have a bunch of strong people working for you, then you're their kind of person. And I think people think upwards when they think career, when in fact, the whole idea of baseball cards and succession planning and so on is like, no, you have to think downwards. When the CEO sits next to you on a plane, you could say, well, sir, we had a good quarter last quarter. We did this, this, and this. We missed this number because of this. And I have to say, the things that are exciting for me is this new initiative here. And I've got two people that are working for me that I essentially should not be allowed to hold on to. Somebody needs to find a place for these people to be my peer or someday to work that I'll work for them because hopefully they'll remember me, that I was their boss that got them there, but these people are capable of more, and the organization is missing out on their top gear. And I've been on the corporate plane when a person, a VP, a couple of levels down, had a conversation like that with the CEO, and the CEO says, okay, that's great. I love that. Can you come by my office sometime the next couple of weeks, sit down, and we'll go over your people real quick? Or meet with Mike. Mike will go over some of this stuff with you, because I really want some insight. We always need to find good people. You said something earlier, too, that warmed my heart. As an engineer who didn't learn this until I was out of school, it's all about people. And you said that what the senior people care about is people. Yes, they have results. Yes, they have numbers. Yes, profitability matters. And yes, they have returns they have to deliver to their shareholders, their owners, or whomever. But they know the engine of that is people. And so those meetings, even though nothing happens, to your point, in the meeting itself, we're not putting round pegs and square holes in the meeting, they are essentially talking about the most important asset. And I hate saying that, because the whole human resources thing, oh, people are our most important asset, it's laughable a lot of times at the lowest levels. But that's exactly what really effective leaders think about. Where are my people? Who are the people? It's all about putting the right people in the right place. And why would I want somebody underperforming because the role doesn't allow them to perform? Because if I'm a fairly senior person, if I'm you, and I know I've got a superstar in a job that doesn't let them be a superstar, the first thing I think of is, I have risk of loss. That's right. The first thing I think of. If I have an A player in a B role, I want somebody, maybe not screaming at me, but saying, look, this guy's better than this, and I don't mind that the guy who works for me getting promoted above me, he's better than me, but the organization would benefit more from him being here or her being here in this role rather than him working for me. He makes me look good. And certainly there are managers who want that person working for them so that they can be made to look good. But the true leader, who is also a manager, to your point, is the one who says, where does this person do the most good for the organization?
100%.
And it's always about people. And it took me until I was 30 years old to learn that.
You talk a lot about, you know, the two key measures of success as a manager, or the things that you should be measuring are results and retention.
Yep.
I think sometimes people hear that and they think about my results and my retention.
Yes.
But it's not, right? And particularly as you get higher in the organization, it's about our results and our retention. So if you've got, like you said, that A player in a B role, keeping them there ticks the retention box, but it doesn't, right?
No, it doesn't.
Not.
Yeah.
And probably actually it doesn't tick the retention box, because ultimately someone else, whether outside of your organization, will recognize the capability that that person has, and they will put them in the right box, and you haven't retained them. But results and retention is about, what are we doing as an organization? How are we achieving the greatest results as an organization? How are we retaining our best talent as an organization? And an organization could be 10 people, or it could be 100,000, or it could be, you know, there are even bigger organizations than that, of course, right? Yeah. So, you know, that's the key.
Something else that just occurred to me. You take two different managers. I'm going to compare Mike, who cares about his people, works hard for his people. He's got an A player and a B role. And then there's Mark, me, and I've got an A player in the B role. Now, I need him there. He's too valuable to me. He makes my job easier. He allows me to get done what I need to get done, and so on. Well, Mike, on the other hand, has been smart enough to create some relationships with some people, upwards and sideways in the organization. And he's not afraid to say, my A player is really good, and if you have an A role, I would love for her to move into that role. Whereas I am not promoting my A player. I know inevitably I'm going to lose him, but I'm not promoting him because I don't have the relationships, and I think about myself and my retention rather than the organization's retention results. The end result is your guy gets taken away from you. I probably look at you and say, yeah, Mike just lost a good one. But in fact, you know something I don't know, which is your stock just went up because you helped that person get to where they needed to go. My A player might get taken away from me, but it's not because of me, and my stock just went down because it wasn't because of what I did to help her or him grow to the next level.
Right. And when I, not Mike the manager, but Mike the talent manager, is thinking about up and coming A players, which team am I putting them in?
Yeah.
It's not your team.
No.
It's not your team. I'm putting them in the other team because I know that there's a manager there who will grow that talent and put it out into the organization. And not only am I looking at you as the talent manager doing that, but other people in the organization, other up and coming people are saying, wow, that's someone who really creates opportunity. I want to work for that person. You know, and I don't just want to be in their team. I want to work hard for that person because opportunities will come from that. You know, discretionary effort. That's what it's all about. Your A player in a B role stuck there is not putting in discretionary effort.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting B or maybe even C output out of them because they're not engaged.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that. There's a great story that we've only told a couple of times on air. Before Mike and I partnered on this, before I sold my first company, of course, my previous company, he was a client of mine. Of course, I'd known him for 40 years and we worked together in the Army. We knew each other at school, but Mike was a very successful manager. And he would argue that a lot of what his success was came from my coaching him and consulting this organization. But I would say, no, he was smart beforehand. But he said, I wanted a bunch of superstars working for me. And he did have them. I think of two people, Kathy Stultz and Mark Madigan and some other people who I'm still friends with that are wonderful people. And Mike said, I had all these superstars working for me and I got them all promoted to be my peers. And in the process, because I was the one that helped them, because I lobbied for them, because I showed senior people, his boss and her boss, why they were so good. When they got promoted, they were his peers, but he was what Mike and I call first among equals because he was the one that got him. So now the guy, Mark Madigan, as an example, who used to be Mike's direct, is now Mike's peer, but he feels he owes Mike. And he is always deferential and respectful for what Mike did for his career. Mm-hmm. And that's not true if Mark Madigan is working for me and I'm not helping him get to the next level. Now, when Mark Madigan becomes my peer, we would like to hope that he's focused on the organization and he's not aligned against me, but he's certainly not aligned in my favor. He's not going to be as collaborative as he would as if I had been the one that really said, Mark, you should be my peer and maybe even my boss someday. And I think there are far too few managers in the world that have said to their people in the past, I could work for you someday. And that's a compliment. I won't lose any sense of self-worth if you end up getting out-promoted above me, because if you win, I win. And more importantly, the organization wins. I've said it 1,000 times and nobody ever hears me, but a rising tide lifts all boats. We want the best people to do the most they possibly can. And obviously, if that person is not aligned, if they're not the right person, great. Okay, they're talented, but they're not a team player. Fine. We maybe can fix that. But I'll never forget when Mike said, yeah, I basically promoted all my people to be my peers. And I was first among equals. And I could have anything I want, anytime I wanted, because, I mean, I hate to say it, but in the world of colleagues and peers, if you need a favor, you can ask somebody who used to work for you. They're not going to say no, because they saw you do the hard work that you needed to do, that so many managers don't, as you alluded to earlier, that helps people be successful. And you'll always be owed a favor. And I think sometimes people sort of laugh at the idea of favors, but favors exist. They do.
They do. It's, I mean, again, because it's all about relationships, right?
Yeah.
And it's relationship capital. You know the people that you need to do something for because you asked them for something or they gave you something that really helped you out. You're thinking about it. And if you're not, then more fool you.
Yeah.
Because they won't do it again.
Yeah. Something else you said earlier that really kind of I chuckled at. It's been 10, 15 years ago before you and I met. An HR person, HR business partner for a vice president, they had gone through a talent management thing that I had facilitated and they had some baseball cards involved. And there were several people that came up in conversations. And one of the senior VPs may have been a C-suite guy, although there are too many C-suite guys and gals nowadays. There are rafts of them. Said, well, look, I'm looking for some people. And so I'm going down to that facility in the next couple of months, a couple of times for some meetings with customers and so on. So I'm going to either stay an extra day or I'm going to have dinner or I'm going to have a meeting and I'm going to want to hear from some of the people. And so he set up some meetings. This is a fairly senior person, and I was knowledgeable and well-connected with this particular facility they were going to. It happened to be in Ohio, and this was with Lerner Companies. And he went down there with the express purpose of meeting with some customers, doing some operational stuff, but also in addition, as a fundamental part of his calendar, to do a meeting with these senior folks. And then there was going to be a dinner afterwards, and it wasn't going to be a 50-person dinner. It was going to be like a 10-person dinner. And there were three or four people that were on the list that had been discussed that had upside potential that had said when their boss had said, hey, there's just going to be this meeting, you should go. And he's like, no, I'm too busy. Yeah, it's going to be a dog and pony show. I don't want to go to that. I know he's the CAO or he's the EVP or whatever. Yeah, but no, I'm not going to go. And the boss said, no, I think you should go. You need to expose this. This is part of career management. No, that's not what I do. I'm not going to do it. And they literally refused. And that person was in part, they're not going to announce, I'm coming down and I want to see you and visit with you for 5 minutes, even if it's in a group, so I can lay my eyes on you. And those people, a couple of them, didn't get the chance. A couple people did get the chance. They ended up getting some special assignments. And one of them complained, the guy who didn't go. And he said, why didn't you tell me? The boss said, I told you twice. You should go. This, you know, I'm not going to make you go, but this is where you meet senior people and they need to shake your hand and look in the eye and chat with you for a minute. And they're going to ask you about your business and you need to have good answers. It may be a little bit of an elevator speech, but nonetheless, you're not going to get an hour to present to the chief operating officer of the company. And they told me later, you know, I really feel like I got screwed. And I told them, I said, I don't think you did. I think you did well. Your name was talked about. A senior person came down, mentioned in fact that he wanted to meet you and as part of a group because he doesn't have enough time to meet with everybody individually. And you spurned the offer. And he didn't think you were giving him the finger. He was just saying, well, okay, I didn't meet that guy, but I met these other two people and they were great. And so I've got places for him. And I don't think people understand that that's the kind of thing that happens. But it does, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I'll never forget that. Okay, so I'm a manager, senior manager, director. Tell me two or three things I can do. You mentioned creating a relationship, maybe not with somebody like you, but maybe somebody who works for you, depending upon the size of the organization. So you're suggesting that I should have a relationship with some people in HR, maybe in talent and so on. At worst, I should probably have a relationship with my HR business partner. I should work on that relationship because he or she definitely knows you. Anything other than results from retention that I should be thinking about?
Look, I think we talked about this at the start. You need to know where the organization is going and why.
Yeah.
And how you and your team fit into that, because that gives you the guiding star, if you like, to help you move forward. You need to know your people. And I would say, look, if you do nothing more than create the baseball cards for your team and say to someone in talent management or your HR business partner, hey, look, I've done this. I really want to just check it out with you. Get your guidance.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like to hear that? Get your guidance on where I could do this better. If you've done a great job, they're like, wow. Okay. And if they don't know you, now they know you. And they're like, wow, this is someone who takes it seriously. The next time I need to do the succession meeting or the performance meeting or whatever it might be,
right?
I'm like, I'm coming to you first. And when I, as a talent management person, are trying to convince some other skeptics within the organization, and there are up and down the organization, if I'm trying to convince some skeptics of why taking this approach with respect to people management is beneficial, I'm using you as an example. So, get to know the people, and each organization is different, as you say. So know where you're going, know the people that matter within that context. And I guess probably try and find, if you can, and this might be a little more difficult, find someone senior in the organization who has a reputation for being a great people manager and find a way to get close to them.
Yeah.
Not to get in their team necessarily, but to say, look, I know that you do this really well. You have a reputation for really focusing on people and doing a great job. I'm a young up and coming manager. I want to be better at this. I want my people to do well. Could you give me 20 minutes just on some of the things that you do? Right. So you're doing two things there. You're learning from someone who has a reputation for doing it well, and you are creating a relationship with that person and signaling to them, and they may well be in some of those conversations, that you are someone who takes it seriously. So if you can find that person or those people and have those conversations, that would be something that I'd try and do as well.
Good. Okay. I would be doing you a disservice if I didn't end this conversation, because we've been talking now for an hour. I don't know if you realize it. I just looked down and I said, oh my gosh, it's been an hour. Folks, you don't know, but Mike and I have known each other for a number of years, but I would be doing you a disservice if I didn't allow you to tell people where you were from.
I'm from New Zealand. And as we have this conversation, Mark, I can see behind you a cushion there.
That's right.
With a kiwi on it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's that is a cushion from Cape Kidnappers, my favorite international golf course in the world, in near Hawke's Bay on the North Island of the Canoe. Those of you, if you want to look up what the Canoe is, that's what the locals call. If they're not using the Maori name, that's the local person's name for New Zealand. And Cape Kidnappers is a wonderful golf course. And it was told to me, Mike, you'll appreciate this, that that logo for Cape Kidnappers, and also Cowrie Cliffs, by the way, they're part of a group of hotels owned by Julian Robertson, who is a joint Kiwi and American citizen, that it was the reverse of the Royal New Zealand Air Force. I did some research. I thought that was neat, because I'm a big fan of New Zealand in general. It's probably the most beautiful place in the world. And come to find out, it's not the reverse. It's actually, that's actually the Royal New Zealand Air Force logo.
It is.
And part of the reason I have it here, not because it just reminds me of golf, but there's a great story about a Kiwi. And I've told this story a few times on air, and I'm going to repeat it in front of you. I always forget the guy's name. There's a story of a Kiwi who during World War II was serving on a British bomber, making a bomb run to Germany during World War II. And the plane was shot on the flight back from Germany. And one of the engines was on fire. And this Kiwi won the Victoria Cross, was awarded the Victoria Cross, the highest honor that the British armed forces, including the Commonwealth, could give. And what he did, because they couldn't figure out how to put the fire out, and if they didn't put the fire out, the plane was going to go down in the English Channel, he tied a rope around his waist, and he climbed out on the wing while the plane was above the English Channel, took his coat off, and beat the flames out on the engine with his coat, and then climbed back into the plane. So now he's awarded the Victoria Cross, and I feel terrible I don't have the guy's name on the tip of my tongue. I never seem to do with this guy. He's from a little town in the North Island, and he gets to meet the Prime Minister, Churchill, who by that point in the war is famous. And he goes to 10 Downing, and he's there with a couple of other Victoria Cross winners, and the guy is just tongue-tied. He's a small-town guy. He's a gunner on the plane. He's not the pilot. He's not an officer. He's a regular guy. He's a soldier, an airman, and Churchill cannot get him to talk. He tries to talk. Churchill's a fairly, you know, loquacious guy, but he can't seem to get the guy to talk. Finally, Churchill realizes something, and he says, I think I've just realized it's probably fairly intimidating for you to meet someone like me. And the guy immediately turns and says, yes, sir, it is. And Churchill says, now you know what it's like for me to meet someone like you. That's my favorite New Zealand story right there. I love it. So yeah, I'm a big fan of New Zealand. I hope you get to go back soon. I hope I get to go back soon once they allow us non-natives to go back. And I hope we can do this again sometime when you're running a huge talent organization with 500,000 people in it. Please give my best to your wife, Monique, and her family. And thank you for donating your time to the hundreds of thousands of people who are going to listen to this. And I promise you, any emails I get, I'll forward them on to you so you can answer all their questions.
You're too kind.
Mike, from all of us here at Mandarin Tools, for the years of friendship you've given me and your family and so on, thank you again.
Thank you, Matt.
Okay, folks, that's it. Hope you enjoyed our discussion. It's these kinds of things, because people in our community have succeeded and gotten to high levels, where we get to ask the community to give back. And Mike was happy to do so. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next week.